And the question I was interested in essentially is people have talked about non-equilibrium processes where you come in by hand and you dial some parameter and you're trying to probe a phase transition, like a quantum critical point, for example. But people haven't talked about the situation whereby you have a closed system where this parameter is actually dynamical. And so this is the physics that I'm going to be talking about today. So here's the outline. So first, I want to describe essentially the basic setup of the problem, which I think is quite general, really. And talk about a phenomena whereby this field that is actually dialing dynamically a relevant parameter in the theory, that how it gets trapped. And we're going to talk about general scaling arguments. So you can use what are called Kibble-Zurich type scaling arguments. This is sort of standard in the non-equilibrium literature to try to understand the regimes under which you get trapping. And then we check our general arguments in the particular case of the transverse field Ising chain numerically, which is something that one can do because it's an integrable system. And so we're going to look at two different regimes. One, where we artificially zero out completely the total potential, and we'll see trapping. And then when we allow a small slope, and there we'll also see trapping. And then I'll speculate about things that I don't have numerical evidence for yet and conclude. Okay, so what's the basic setup? So the basic setup is very straightforward. You take a quantum theory with a second order phase transition. The parameter that you would vary, the coupling that you would vary to get to the critical point, you promote that thing to a dynamical field. So essentially, you couple it. So here I'm kind of giving you what it looks like in terms of continuum language. Is there some kind of pointer? Yeah, hockey stick. So, in the continuum, you would mostly couple dominantly to whatever is the relevant operator. It takes you across the phase transition, and you allow this parameter to have a kinetic term. And the important point that will make life easy, although maybe it can be relaxed in the future, is I'm going to assume that the kinetic energy here is extensive. So it is something that depends on the volume of the system. It's a natural assumption in various physical contexts. And again, this is just the most relevant parameter. So this is the thing that sets up the correlation length. It's the thing that depends on the new critical exponent. And so essentially what we want to do is we want to study the dynamics of this closed system.
So the kinetic term is essentially classical.
Yeah, the kinetic term is essentially classical. That's kind of the advantage. I mean, I'm hoping that we might be able to relax this in some cases in the future, but this is a good thing to just get your feet wet since this kind of thing hasn't been really studied. And again, yeah, indeed, it's very good that the energy for this field is extensive because it is classical. So at least we can deal with it at first pass. It also means that lambda can efficiently heat up the quantum degrees of freedom of the system. And so something like having it being trapped around the critical point, which is really what we're going to be exploring today, is kind of natural. And finally, because there's essentially just time, you can use scaling arguments, the so-called Kibble-Zurich non-equilibrium type scaling arguments, to try to try to understand what is actually going to happen and to make some predictions for the dynamics.
So gradients of lambda aren't allowed.
Gradients of lambda are not allowed. Yeah, it's interesting. Maybe in principle one could study more complicated things. But I think that this is a fun thing to start with because there's a more variety of physical systems. One could be just a toy. But maybe one day it'll be built. So the idea, for example, is that you have something on a track, right? And you have some spins and a magnet. And so lambda is really related to the motion of some macroscopic object. And so it naturally has sort of an extensive kinetic energy, for example. I mean, in principle, because we are essentially probing the phase transition of, let's say, the spin system, the motion of this object tells us the value of the critical coupling. So it's literally a toy. In fact, I don't know, maybe coming to a store near you, it stops at a certain point. That's the main feature of the toy. But also, in some cases, you can have a system that you can even artificially somewhat break apart into two pieces. One is where you have some sort of mean field degree of freedom, some sort of collective mode that's emergent, which is essentially classical. You have a gap system, and so this is the lowest energy mode. It's some effective classical mode that's then coupled to the other quantum degrees of freedom of the system. So depending on the scales involved in a particular system, it's possible that this can be realized. So when, for example, lambda can be some kind of order parameter that's slowly varying. And finally, just for fun, I mean, although I don't know exactly what it will do, but it's also fun to imagine that this thing is something like an infinitron field in the early universe, and maybe there's some interesting phenomena that can be generated by considering this. So probably my best bet is that really it's relevant for this, but we'll see. Okay, but it's a fun problem to study. And so what are the basic features? Well, one, which I've been saying, is essentially that as this parameter evolves towards the critical coupling, the gap closes. And so it's very natural to suppose that most of the entropy gets generated once you are very close to the critical point. In other words, what lambda is going to want to do is it's going to want to lose most of its energy as it approaches the critical point. And in fact, you know, I'll show you more data for this transverse field Ising model, but here's just the kind of point illustrated very clearly that here's the lambda field, here it is rolling along, and so you can measure the amount of heat that gets deposited, and right at the critical point, you see that the heat just spikes. So it's a nice kind of situation whereby, because the physics is very much dominated by what's actually going on right at the critical point, you really can use your intuition from scaling and critical theory to try to estimate something like, for example, how much heat is being lost, at least parametrically. And another thing which is important in the story is that as you're approaching the critical point, of course, you're exciting these quantum degrees of freedom. And these excited degrees of freedom can behave like an effective potential for lambda itself at the critical point. So another way of just drawing a picture is that even if there's some slope whereby, you know, you would think that this is just going to keep rolling down, but because you're making excitations, you can create an effective potential that basically traps it. And that's very similar to a situation where you have temperature. So it's just a kind of non-equilibrium version of the case where you have temperature. I mean, you're used to turning on temperature and having an effective potential that that is important to take into account when you're trying to figure out where does the field want to sit. And here it's the same sort of story, except that you're generating these excitations, and so it's a non-equilibrium way of generating an effective potential. All right, so essentially what I'll try to show you is that using various scaling arguments, you can see that trapping can occur for a variety of initial conditions. So there'll be some regimes. So it's not like some measure zero kind of physics.
Why do you call it non-equilibrium?
Well, I mean, you're just creating excitations. You're having these things. It's not a system at equilibrium, right? This thing is rolling, excitations are changing. And so it's something which is changing as a function of time, but eventually, of course, it gets trapped.
Yeah, but also if you change it adiabatically, this time the lambda, there will be a potential in that case as well, due to quantum fluctuations.
Sure.
So in this sense, it will be equilibrium. But you are studying, yeah.
Right, but what I'm trying to say, I guess, is this picture. So actually, the non-adiabaticity is the crucial point. Mm-hmm. But you're right, some part of it, of course, there's some regime which a lot can be understood just from the adiabatic thinking. Okay, that's the problem we're trying to solve, and so let's just go through sort of standard scaling analysis to try to understand what can happen. Yes?
Is there a simple physical motivation why you should get this lambda to be a freedom?
Well, as I
said,
why do I expect it to be trapped? This is where the entropy production is the biggest. You're exciting the most number of degrees of freedom, and so you're just the heat that you're losing. You're losing heat the friction is the biggest, basically. That's very simply how it is. But on top of friction, which is kinetic friction, I guess you could call it, there's also the situation whereby you actually change the effective potential in which it lives. So I wouldn't call it exactly static friction, but it's kind of a localizing potential.
When it comes to rest, there must be some self-consistent analysis where...
Yes, and I'll perform that self-consistent analysis, which is speculative. And I'll tell you exactly. But so there's essentially a self-consistent potential that a place where it's trapped that is self-consistent with that potential. The effective potential gets generated. Okay, so just at first pass, so that we don't have too many things going on, let's just start with a zero total potential for lambda. So what do I mean by this? Well, I'm going to tune, basically. So let's just imagine that I take the Hamiltonian that I wrote before, where lambda is coupled to some quantum degrees of freedom, and then I just artificially add an external potential. Now, just from just the equilibrium point of view, without having to generate these excitations, when lambda is coupled to these degrees of freedom, I could integrate these degrees of freedom out, and that would generate some sort of ground state energy, if you like, as a function of lambda. That is what I want to remove. So let me just tune for now, choose my external potential in a way that completely removes the ground state energy. Okay. So basically, the potential is flat. I'm just moving. I will create some sort of forms of excitations, but I don't have to worry about a slope. Okay, we'll get away from that later, but this is kind of a nice pass. So how do we perform the analysis? Well, away from the quantum critical point, it can't be simpler. We start with some initial velocity. We're moving. And we have some kinetic energy. So I'm going to set... so. The kinetic energy is extensive, and in principle, there can be a mu parameter here, which I've sort of, if you like, is sort of measuring the size of the extensive kinetic energy compared to the extensive energy of the quantum system. But let's just set that to 1 so that we don't pollute our equations too much. And so the idea is, as we've said, that most of the heat is actually generated at the quantum critical point. So we will use scaling arguments to at least parametrically understand what happens. So how do we do this? Well, essentially, we come in with a velocity v that is really our only dimensionful parameter. And if we want to understand what happens at the critical point, all we have to do is create a conversion table, right? We want to relate the dynamical scale at the critical point to our input scale v, right? So there's some dynamical scale at the critical point, which is 1 over c. For now, but let's relate that to v because it has to be basically set up by v ultimately. Our coupling lambda is related to this scale to the 1 over nu by definition. On the other hand, we have that lambda is vt, and t has, again, some relation to the correlation length with a z critical exponent that relates time to space. And so the general equation is here, and so that actually tells you what this scale is in terms of v. So essentially, the typical scale that you expect, length scale that you expect, given this velocity, is this thing. And this is what is typically called Kibble-Zurich type of arguments. And now you can ask, well, how much heat is actually generated? The heat is extensive. It's, again, basically dimensional analysis. It's proportional to the volume, and then it's related to this parameter taken to the power of the spatial dimensions plus z. And so you have yourself a very nice prediction for how much heat is generated as a function of your input velocity. And then life is very simple. You get trapped when you lose too much energy. And so generating more heat compared to your kinetic energy gives you a criteria for trapping. So, that's the criteria in general for a general system. For example, you can get some intuition for it. You can take the standard Mielenfeld situation, z equals 1, nu critical exponent is 1/2. And so that criteria just says this. And if you look at that, what this implies is that as long as your spatial dimension is less than 5, which is the dimension I prefer to be in, as long as you're moving slowly enough, you get trapped. So essentially, you always start generating enough heat and your heat will dominate your kinetic energy and you're just going to stop. So that's what we learn for this particular example. And then we can go out and check our general scaling argument by looking at the so-called transverse field Ising model. So this is what we numerically simulated. It's everybody's favorite model. It's integrable. So here, this is what it looks like. It's a bunch of spins on a line. And you are dialing the magnetic field, if you like, which couples to the z direction. It's a function of time. That's your dynamical field. And as everybody knows and loves, this is an integrable model, can be mapped to free fermions. For us continuum people, really all this is in the continuum is a Dirac, 1+1 dimensional Dirac fermion, where I am changing the mass. So the mass becomes a dynamical parameter. And the ground state potential, in, at least in the continuum limit, again, looks like this. There's some UV dependent piece and the standard fermionic kind of contribution. But of course, on a lattice, you can precisely calculate this, including all the lattice spacing effects. So as I was saying, the dynamics can be solved numerically because it's essentially a quadratic Lagrangian. You can Fourier transform it, and then there's the so-called famous Jordan-Wigner transformation. You map spins as kind of a bosonization, but a kind of discrete version of that. You map spins to fermions. You have a Hamiltonian that depends on momentum like so. You can even simplify it further by sort of rewriting this as just these sort of spin variables because you just have fermionic statistics. And so this is really what your Hamiltonian looks like. And you're just solving, since all momentum decouple, right? Every single momentum bin is decoupled from every other momentum bin. The system you're solving is very simply a two-component wave function with this two-component 2x2 matrix that depends on lambda. And then the lambda equation of motion is this. It's a magnetic field, so it couples to the spin, which in fact is a function of lambda. And because I tuned the potential, I'm adding this external sort of tuning that eliminates the ground state contribution. So the system of differential equations that we numerically solved is just this one. Exactly. And so that's basically the equation we're solved. And so let's try to see what's happening. So the first thing is trapping happens. Here it is. You can see that, you know, as you so you have large velocity, then you oscillate. So this is the critical value. If you have smaller velocity, you oscillate less. And eventually, at some critical velocity, you just stop. So that's just trapping check. Now, can you verify the scaling arguments? Well, the TFI scaling is that spatial dimension is 1, z is 1, nu is 1. It's very convenient. Everything is 1. And so our particular argument is that the heat per volume is v, but the kinetic energy, of course, goes like mu v squared. And so you have a sense that you should be trapped when v is less than some number over mu. And also, again, the sort of Kibble-Zurich arguments tell us how lambda parameter depends on v and how the time, typical time scale, depends on v once you are no longer adiabatic, once you're at the critical point. And so you could check the scaling collapse occurs, and it does. So you check this, you take the same theory for various mu's and t's, you rescale your t appropriately to your what you think the scaling behavior, you rescale lambda appropriately, and all the curves fall on the same thing. And you also can check that the critical v, which is sort of comes from here, goes like 1 over, like 1 over.
So,
yeah.
Near the critical
velocity. Oh, near the like a double critical. I don't know. I didn't think about that. I mean, yeah.
Can you show the picture again where you see the
trapping? I mean, so it just sort of oscillates for a while, but I guess there's some interesting. Right. There's a parallel in the envelope of wiggles. That's right. That's right. It could be interesting to look at. Yes?
Does it depend on the initial position for lambda?
It doesn't. So this is a good point. We'll come back to that. Yeah, so so that's the nice thing is that in this particular case, we'll get back to the right way to think about it, but here it has no memory. So you can start, because the potential effectively is flat, there's nothing about the energetics that knows about it, we'll come back to this, but essentially what happens is that as V becomes small, it forgets about where it started, it only cares about the velocity as it crosses the critical point. Yeah, that's a very good question. It's exactly the right question to ask. It's not always true. We'll come back to that.
Why does the light then continue? Because, we go to the point and the potential will take it to the flat, right?
Yeah, but it does generate some excitations. Exactly. That's exactly what we'll be very interested in that in the future. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So. And just for fun, you can also look at the excitation spectrum. So, it's a bunch of fermions. They kind of make a sort of funny Fermi. It's not a Fermi surface, but they have some excitation spectrum. It looks kind of like this. You can look at how it gets filled up as a function of time. That's going to be useful later on, just to keep in mind that there'll be some characteristic scale that gets set essentially by energy conservation. And so this is an integrable system. So that's why it doesn't really look like you would expect once you populate a bunch of fermions. I'm assuming that if the fermions actually interacted with each other, this would look closer to just being a Fermi seed. But this way, there's some structure there because of the integrability.
Is it also an equation for solving that you could never escape?
For me, like, this is basically escape, right? So effectively here, once you get out to the lattice spacing, it's kind of over the lattice spacing, you can't oscillate much more, you're exciting the system up and down, right? So, to me, trapped really means that you have to be kind of, below at least 1/10 of the lattice spacing, something like that, where the continuum physics is dominating, the critical point physics is dominating. Yeah, generally you would just, you're exciting the system, so it's just going to slosh around, right? Exchanging energy.
Well, if you have other degrees of freedom that couple to lambda, which can suck the heat away.
Yes.
Then eventually it would, lambda could run away.
That's true. That's right. That's right. And in fact, that's an interesting question maybe I'll get back to this when I, during the concluding remarks. All right. Those are the general features. What about maybe a more realistic and interesting situation whereby you don't actually zero out the entire potential, but you zero out some of it. So you imagine that there's a little bit of tuning and so you have some slope to work with and you're moving towards this critical point. I'll argue that if alpha is smallish, then you can get trapping. There are other also interesting things like what mu is. Let's talk about it. And of course, in principle, you can consider all sorts of initial conditions, some distance away from the critical point, some initial velocity. But since we've sort of talked about velocity, let's just simplify life, because we want to have only a single dimensional scale in the game. Let's just start from some initial distance at zero velocity. Okay? So part of our analysis should hold, right? Because if you're starting at some initial distance, then you can just put conservation of energy, assuming that the heat is only lost at the critical point. You can predict what the velocity will be as you come in, and you just plug that in, right? You use the exact same equation we had before for the generation of heat, and you just require that the heat is bigger than your initial potential energy, and then you should stop. Okay, and so that implies trapping, in fact, for as long as the initial position is less than 1 over alpha, so just 1 over alpha. Yeah. So that's actually why you already see that if alpha is smallish, then you're kind of opening up. You don't have to worry about order 1 numbers. But in principle, I don't know, in a given system, you might be able to go down to larger alpha. So that depends on the detailed dynamics. But at least parametrically, I can be clear, it's very clear that as alpha becomes smaller and smaller, there's a trapping regime. Now, getting back to the question that was asked, you do have to worry about adiabaticity versus non-adiabaticity. So this seems to suggest that you should just be able to go to arbitrary low lambda. It's not true. And that's because there was an implicit assumption, sort of an adiabatic assumption, as you approach the critical point, which is that the time that it took you to get to the critical point is bigger than the inverse gap. And of course, that's not always the case. You have to check it. So if you assume that you have sort of a sloping potential, then you could put in what this criteria really means, and you can discover that it's not actually valid when lambda initial is less than some value of alpha to some power. And so you have to think about what's the appropriate scaling behavior below this value of lambda. And that's essentially, in some ways, even a simpler scaling behavior. It's the case where it's very non-adiabatic. The time to critical point is much less than the inverse gap. So it's the change is effectively instantaneous. It's like an instantaneous quench, essentially. So you are just changing lambda initial. As far as the system is concerned, you're going from lambda initial to zero. And therefore, lambda initial is the only scale in the game. And therefore, again, you can estimate how much heat should be generated. And so this exact same energy argument gives you the final trapping range that's actually valid. And that's what it is. So it's as long as alpha is somewhat small, this and this thing is positive, which is quite reasonable, you get a window for trapping to occur. Okay, so the situation is actually a little bit better and more interesting, and that's because the kinetic energy actually did have this mu parameter. And one way to think about mu is that it's sort of the ratio of the extensivity of the lambda energy to the extensivity of the quantum degree of freedom energy. And so in particular, if you imagine a situation where the quantum critical theory has a large n in it, then mu is naturally of order 1 over n. And so if you actually restore mu, you actually get a more favorable window. So having more degrees of freedom that you can lose your energy to is obviously good. So you lose your energy. So in fact, you know, if you have something like a little bit of n here, then in fact the window gets larger, and maybe you can even tolerate a slightly bigger alpha to get trapping. All right, so we have a window for trapping. We have a prediction which is general. We go back to our toy, the transverse field Ising chain, and we check that we were right.
What happens if you say start at the critical point but have a potential?
It's not enough. That's a very, well, if you don't have a potential, because remember the potential was generated only because you excited the system.
I thought you should have the slope that you're inputting by hand.
Right.
Yeah, so you start
at Okay, thank you. Yeah, I should have made this up. So this actually, so continuity kind of would demand that you don't get trapped below this value, including zero, mm-hmm. So you don't get trapped. I don't know. That seems to be, so far it seems to work. Okay, so if you're really starting at the critical point, the point is you're just not generating enough excitations to trap yourself in some way. Yeah. Okay, so with the TFI chain, you take the critical exponents specific to that theory, you plug them in, and then your prediction is that this is your trapping window. And then you go out and you check, and this is your trapping window. So this is sort of data points that we've gathered to try to understand the phase diagram. So we decided that this is sort of a convenient way of presenting it. You have a lambda initial over alpha. Here's your range. And here is mu alpha squared. So you see you have this boundary. It gives you this curve. The other boundary just is some constant value. And you see that you have these data points. And let me show you this particular slice of the theory. This particular slice of the theory looks like this. So if you're out here, then you're not trapped. You're just wiggling all over the place. When you get closer, then your wiggles get smaller and smaller. That's the black curve. And then finally, if you're in the trap region, you're trapped. Yes.
Even if alpha is positive, you might think that adding this slope.
Yeah, you might think. Right, now I'll give you an argument. But basically, you generate enough excitation. This is in some ways a region in which you generate enough excitations that actually traps you. Yep.
What determines the period of this oscillation? Is it the velocity?
Well, it must be related to the, I mean, the only scale in the game is lambda initial. But, we didn't study that. I mean, it's an interesting question. I mean, these are all interesting question, but we just wanted to understand the basics, you know. Since apparently things, this wasn't steady, so.
You mentioned to the point where you just actually fly through. I mean, it looks like you oscillate.
Yeah, eventually you fly out a lot, but you're just sloshing energy with the system, but you can completely, I mean, it's because you have a finite number of degrees of freedom eventually, you're not.
How big is alpha?
In this picture, alpha, well, I think really what we did is we chose mu equals 1, so I guess alpha is 10 to the minus 2 or something like that in this particular case.
So it's actually that.
Well, actually, you see this. In fact, this is the answer to it. So there's a product of mu alpha squared here. That's the critical alpha, right? Above here, you never get trapped, right? So let's say mu is 1, and since the scale is like 2 times 10 to the 4, it basically tells you that when alpha is of order 10 to the, so like a hundredth or so. You need alpha of order 1/100th in this particular system to get trapped. Right. Yeah, exactly. So this is what I wanted to discuss. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so it seems nice that the phase diagram is consistent with scaling. Okay, but then let's talk about the degree of trapping, because that's kind of fun. I don't have numerical evidence that's, I have numerical, the TFI chain is consistent with what I'm about to say, but it's interesting to look at a different system for reasons I'm about to explain. So you want to understand how trapped is the final value of lambda. How close to the critical point is it going to be? And very roughly, what is going on? Well, I mean, we've seen, you know, that colorful plot I showed you with the excitation spectrum says that the kind of the total potential includes the slope that we've added and some kind of excitations. And in our case, the TFI system was just a bunch of free fermions. So that's what it looks like, right? So if I were to move away from the critical point a little bit, by some small lambda, this is what I would expect my effective potential to look like. And in practice, if I just want to understand basic scaling arguments, I don't really care about the details of this excitation spectra. So it was a triangle, but let's pretend it's just like a rectangle. So the point is that there's some characteristic scale, kind of the K Fermi that gets populated, which is completely determined by the initial conditions because it was just determined by energy conservation. Potential energy turned into the energy of these fluctuations, and so I know how it scales with my initial position. And so what I'm going to assume, because I'm assuming that I excited the system enough, is that from now on this K star is larger than my final value, because I'm going to be trapped, and so at the end I'm going to be much closer than the energy that I've populated. And so, I can tailor expand this, and what it really looks like is this. There's some zero-order piece that doesn't care about lambda, and then there's these pieces, and really all I'm doing is balancing this against that, right? That's what trapping means, and so minimizing it just tells me effectively this to some order. I mean, I have a log sensitivity, but sort of this is the leading log term, and that's what we see numerically. So lambda is of order alpha over some, you know, not too largest number. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So in this case, it's of order alpha. But here's, so this thing is solid. We see it. Good. But it's interesting to ask what will happen in the general case. So in the general case, I'd expect kind of the same picture. There's some excitation effective potential that depends on some momentum label for the occupation number and lambda. And here's where I'm going to make an assumption, which is at least sensible if you're exciting quasi-particles, which is that this excitation thing should be analytic in the mass squared.
Okay. Yes? What do you mean by lambda final? I mean, the main picture would be that your side stuff, so the phase diagram, you're actually going to the temperature region, not the lambda away from the lambda.
Well, I mean, it's a non-equilibrium process. At some point, you get a distribution of particles, right, that you excited, and the final location for what lambda is. Right? I mean, that's that curve. What the final parameter is for the masses of these particles, for example. So this assumption is, I think, plausible if you have kind of quasi-particle excitations, because you just have some nice distribution here, and something which for small lambda, which is small m, you could kind of Taylor expand. So if you assume that, okay, grant me that assumption, I'm sure it's not true in all cases, but it can be true in some cases where you have simple quasi-particles, then the total potential has a term that doesn't depend on alpha, and then this additional piece, and so higher terms. And so the point is that trapping occurs when you balance this against that. And moreover, of course, again, you could use scaling arguments to say how this depends on the characteristic momentum that you generated when you excited the system. And so you have the following prediction. And this prediction is actually kind of amusing because, well, for one thing, let's just talk about what this K star is. I mean, again, K star is basically determined by energy conservation. And since we our trapping window had this criteria to it, essentially, this K star is usually something smaller than one, but at most can be something of order one. So let's just simplify life and just assume that we are kind of in a regime where this thing is something of order one. And so effectively, what we're finding is this. So of course, what's amusing about that is that nu equals 1/2 is a thing that we are kind of interested in various systems. So if you just have mean field critical exponents, imagine that your mean field your critical exponent is just a little bit away from mean field, and maybe your parameter alpha is slightly small, then you actually get super trapping. It means that you're exponentially localized to the critical point. So that's kind of fun. So you're essentially, in fact, you take your mild tuning, which is the alpha slope, but you get an enormous, potentially an enormous hierarchy.
Right.
Well, I don't know. In most systems, I know epsilon is actually positive, but or it's log something. But you know, this is the prediction. So you. Sure, it's been pretty crazy so far.
So inputting the fixed mass.
Yes.
Well, so
that's why I was interested in trying to understand what it says. I mean, so the main problem, you can ask, why can't you just solve the hierarchy problem with this? Well, because stuff dilutes with the expansion of the universe. But maybe you could come up with something, I don't know. It's an interesting thing to study. I just want to know how long this lives. That's also fun to study, something we didn't really do more realistically. So. Yeah, I guess that's all I have to tell you. All right, so basically we studied a closed system which has got a field coupled to some quantum theory, and the field is essentially a dynamical parameter which controls criticality. When the field had extensive energy, we saw that using Kibble-Zurich type arguments, we could analyze the dynamics. We argued that there's a sort of, you know, chunk of phase space in which you get trapping, which is typically for slow velocities, small slopes, or maybe some mismatch in the degrees of freedom between the quantum system and the, when the quantum system is a little bit more extensive, let's say, than our dynamical field. And so we tested this non-equilibrium kind of arguments with scaling arguments with numerical simulation, and there's lots of interesting things to do because that's the only type of system we've studied so far. You would want to understand how this works with scalars, what happens when you have spontaneous symmetry breaking, like you could try to do the ON model at large n, which is also integrable at large n. You can study, in that case, for example, super trapping. And then there's an interesting question whether there's an analogous story for a classical phase transition. I mean, you can imagine tuning yourself to some critical classical phase transition point and varying some parameter, and now you're just integrating over configurations, so your z critical exponent could be something funny because it depends on the way that you sample your ensemble, but maybe there is an analogous story in that case which would be fun to explore. Again, what happens in the early universe, does it tell you something interesting, is sort of fun to look at, we sort of assumed a classical limit for this particle, but maybe in some cases one could start thinking about 1/volume effects where, for example, effectively we never included loops associated with lambda, right? So maybe we could think about what those effects are and if they change anything or not. So, thanks.
question. Can you say a little more about the implications for fine tuning the standard model?
There are none yet.
It's plausible.
If it was in finite volume and I didn't have to dilute it, well, I mean, basically, I have to heat up the universe a lot, right? And then I don't know. It's a question of time scales.
I don't know. You don't have to do it. It happened.
It happened, right? But then everything gets cooled off.
No, lambda
is the he's talking about. It's the Higgs mass.
Oh, the Higgs mass.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think the problem is that, you know, I'm relying on this, right? Something like this, and this just goes away. It just dilutes with
the. It's a beautiful idea. It would explain why there's so much crap in the standard.
I would love it to explain things, but I don't have a model yet. So why don't we we can think about it. I mean, there are things. There's a simple argument that seems to say it might not work, but I don't know. Oh, just excitations dilute, right? So my potential, that's like temperature. It's like, so imagine, basically I'm cooling.
You're saying that the trapping would go away.
The trapping go away, it starts sliding back.
There are models for solar roll inflation based on this idea, where the inflow time rolls slowly because it rolls and produces crap.
I know, but that's not what I want to do, that's less interesting.
No, I know, I agree, but I mean, they both, it's difficult for the same reason.
Right. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you could organize something artificially where it lives a long time, or you could couple something else. But the universe cools it off, and the potential, you know, my little parabola goes away.
Do you comment again on that sine of epsilon when you're super trapping zone?
Well, I mean, I think. I think what actually happens with the sine of epsilon situation is that it's like, I mean, I think in any given system it makes sense, but you have to be careful because it's like your parabola degenerates into an absolute value. It's really what happens. And so there's a kind of discontinuity, right? I mean, you have something soft and then, yeah. So you're kind of more sensitive to what actually is going on at the very tip.
Right,
exactly. It's like this thing flops.
Okay.